monks and thinking like a monk can actually apply to your daily living. No, seriously. I mean, think about it. No technology, sleeping on the floor, giving everything away, focusing on meditating all day. Yeah, I mean, that's something we could all do all day, right? You know, I struggled to meditate more than 15 minutes without falling asleep. I have legit tried to meditate and got caught napping. So I couldn't imagine doing it for a whole day, which is why when I heard about the book by Jay Shetty called Think Like a Monk, I was like, there's no way that this is going to apply to anything that we do outside of that world. And to my surprise, it impacted my thinking more than a lot of other books I've read in the last couple of years. And so what I want to do today is just walk you through what I got out of the book, some of my thinking, and see if it might apply to you. Welcome to Curious KDO. I'm your host, and I'm really excited to dive into this book, Think Like a Monk, with you and share what I found. If you're curious about it, stay connected. I'd love to know what you think. So let's start with what the book is about. Think Like a Monk. So who is this Jay Shetty guy? He's a British author who grew up in an Indian family in London, England, and he struggled a bunch early on in life. He was really a person that was trying to find his way. And he was at an event in college and went to a talk that was actually given by a monk. And after graduating, he walked away from everything he had, everything he had spent doing, and moved to India and spent 3 years in an ashram. So can you imagine walking into your traditional parents' house after wrapping up a college degree and going, yep, I'm going to toss that out the window and move to another country and give up everything and try to learn, meditate, and grow? I'm sure that his mother did a lot of nodding while her brain was in overload, really trying to piece together what was happening. And so he had to walk away from all of that. And what he did was he spent 3 years really studying and meditating and learning. But at the end of the day, that wasn't the right place for him. And so after leaving the ashram at the advice of one of his mentors and fellow monks, he went on to start sharing what he learned. And he started doing it at organizations and started doing talks and then doing social media and videos. And that led to his podcast called On Purpose and his book, Think Like a Monk. So diving into this book, there were a few key elements that stood out to me that I wanted to break down into the top five things that I really took away from the book. The first is around mind control and focus. So in this section, the focus is on training your mind to focus on the present moment and remove distractions that drive your brain to either go forward or backwards on your timeline. And when you're forward or backward on your timeline, you're missing the present. And I explained it at one time is, you know, if you think about it, anxiety is thinking too much about the things that haven't happened, and depression is thinking too much about all the things that have happened that you wish were different or changed. And so what it's doing is it's trying to find this place in the middle. You can't control things that have happened because they've happened, and you can't necessarily think about all the things that might happen or adjust that. And so the focus on the future or the past really robs you of what is happening in the present. I mean, think about that. How often have you sat there and really just thought about the exact moment that you're in, not really thinking about anything before or after? And so Jay talks in his book about focusing and refocusing your brain. So to quote him, he says, focus on the root of the problem, not the symptoms. You know, oftentimes people focus on the wrong things when they're trying to figure out an issue or a problem in front of them, and they try to address the symptoms. How often have we heard the phrase, like, you're putting a Band-Aid on something that doesn't need a Band-Aid? We see this happen a lot, let's say, like in healthcare. You know, if you don't eat right, stay healthy, exercises, you get diseases like heart disease or diabetes. And doctors can treat the symptoms of those, but if you don't change the root of the problem, what you're eating, how much you're moving, how active you are, or even the genes that you were born with to some degree and how you modify and change those genes to put you in a healthy space, you're really only treating the symptoms of the disease and not really the core of what might change it long term. And so Jay talks about, you know, where your attention goes, your energy flows. That's a really good quote that I liked from his book. And what it means is the more you focus on things that make you anxious or dissect things in the past over and over, you might be missing what's in front of you at the expense of those feelings. And so think about where your attention goes. Think about the last 24 hours of your day. How much were you present in that exact moment? How much were you spent worrying about something you said or did, or worried about something that's coming up that you have to deal with? And what did you miss by not being in that moment? I think that's a great takeaway for you to think about just a little bit during the day. The second big element that stuck with me was around self-discipline and resilience. And in this section, Jay really focuses on how monks are able to be so disciplined and apply that to their lives and what it means when it becomes, you know, a resilient effort or something that you're able to do over and over. If anyone was around in the last 4 years, resilience is not a nice to have, it's a must have. And any plans you had, especially if you were a leader in business, went sideways so many times, you almost have to laugh at the plans you tossed out the window. We talked a lot about controlling the things we could control and the things we did each day. And those things that you could control were all about giving you confidence in that moment. Jay talks about this quote that I really liked. Resilience is not about avoiding stress, but about learning how to handle it. And I love the story he talks about with the trees in the biodome. You know, they grew for a while. So he tells this story about a biodome, and there are trees in the biodome, and they grew for a while until they toppled over. And the reason they toppled over, can you guess? Without wind and stress from that wind, the roots did not grow deep enough and branch out enough to hold the tree when it gets taller. You know, how many times today are we as people, or especially we as parents or as leaders, you know, want to pull out a pillow or a carpet or bubble wrap, you know, around the kids as they head out the door and never feel any ounce of anything painful or uncomfortable, right? That's a big trend right now. It's like, I never want my kid to feel uncomfortable or feel bad. What you're doing is you're not giving them roots. You're not giving them the ability to be resilient. And we try not to do that in our house. We talk about how, you know, those adversity moments are going to build who you are. But we do see a lot of parents who don't necessarily think that way. And what happens is you unleash this young adult into the world who does not know what uncomfortable feels like, who doesn't have a clue how to deal with stress or setbacks, who isn't equipped to manage disappointment, who didn't get an A because they deserved an A, and so they don't know how to live with a C and take that grade and go, I can make that C into a B, or that C into an A minus, because if I work hard, I can figure that out. You know, that's the easy stuff. When you're going through that, it doesn't seem like it, but it is. And so life is hard, it's terrible, it's messy, and you're going to live long enough that bad stuff is going to happen. And so as you think about equipping people for the world, if you don't equip them to be resilient, you're going to put them into those moments where they're not going to know what to do. And these folks who avoid stress versus figure out how to handle it will actually have no clue, no tools how to manage when things go downhill or make a sharp left turn. You know, how do you think? Where do you focus? And what do you do consistently with no one watching that defines your future? You know, what are the things that you do? I think of this as the reason why I sign up and pay to do races. So I trained and did my first triathlon this year at 46. And there's a really specific reason why I sign up for the races. If I sign up, I will train. I print out the training plan and I do the activities that they map out, you know, 4, 5, 6 days a week to get me ready. And then I completed the event. Do I work out when I don't have a race and I'm working towards? Sure, I go to the gym, I work out. But it's not necessarily with an intention and knowing that I've got to do these specific things to get somewhere. And no one can tell me to go on a run or a bike or a swim. I have to do it myself. And what happens when you have the like, oh, I'm too tired discussion with yourself? You can always find an excuse to say no. The question is, are you going to put stress on yourself and try to do something? And when I say internally that no is not an option, guess what? I get on my suit or my running shoes or I get on a bike and I go. And so The big thing for me is this idea of being able to manage your mindset and being able to put yourself under the appropriate amount of stress so that you can become resilient and do big things. The third big element that I found was overcoming fear and anxiety. And in this section, Jay really focuses on how to manage fears, and by managing those, how it impacts the feeling of anxiety. You know, everyone has a fear index, and I often will tell my son a lot about what fear means. Fear is there for a reason. It was the native individual's instinct that told you to pay attention or run away. It's a feeling in your head and a reaction in your body, and it can be very intense. It is a real thing. What I often tell my son, though, is the difference between someone who's fearful and courageous is not the fear. It's choosing to act even when you feel fear. That's it. And Jay has a really great quote that says, "Fear does not prevent death, it prevents life." And so if fear wins, you're going to lose out on so many things. And what I encourage my son to do is say, even if you might be fearful of it, are you courageous enough to go try something anyway? And I'm big into doing things I've never done before, you know, taking adventures, big and small. And in 2024, I decided to join an app to meet friends because it is super hard at my age. Did my first triathlon. My son and I took his first international trip for spring break. You know, those were some of the first that I was very intentional about doing. And I will go back to the one, meeting new people and asking if they want to start a group text or get to know each other is scary, because you never know what people are going to say. It might work out, it might not. You know, triathlon races where my husband said that my grandma bike with the basket in the front would not work, and I had to get really comfortable on a racing bike and going fast and working through that to get comfortable for the 12 and a half miles I had to ride. Or traveling international alone with my 10-year-old, and planning all the things with no adult backup, no help, you know, things like that. I had fears on some of it, but I also would choose to do it anyway. And one of the key elements with Jay is about putting words to those fears. So he says, you know, here's a great quote that he says, "When we understand our fears, we can transform them into fuel for our growth." You know, I do a lot of public speaking to big groups and small ones because I enjoy it. I like telling stories. I am what I call, quote unquote, work funny, even though I think I could go to the comedy store, maybe. But I think I'm work funny. You know, I tell stories. And it's always surprising to me that so many people are afraid of public speaking. And I've been doing it so long, I struggle with, like, what drives that? Is it the fear of being in front of people and something terrible happens, or you mess up, or you have toilet paper on your shoe? Or is it, you know, the fear that people won't be interested in what you say? They'll get up and walk out or laugh at you, not with you. If you're able to articulate those fears, Jay talks about how those worries can cause you to do a double check before you walk out or practice out loud, which I do multiple times before I give a talk. I'll practice out loud to myself and say it multiple times to make sure it makes sense, that it reads right, that I have the jokes in the right spot that I think are funny. Or it might make you work on your story and share it with multiple people you trust to get feedback before you go out. Or it might require you to trust your gut and just go and try it out. It's one of those things that if you can articulate what's driving that fear, oftentimes you can find ways to mitigate it. The fourth element that really stuck with me was understanding and managing the ego. We all have an ego, but like Star Wars, some parts of the Force are light and some are dark, and we as people have both. You know, think about what you believe about your success. If you've had success in an area of your life, did you get there 100% all you? You're amazing, you did everything yourself, and it was all you. Big ego. Or are you more like me that looks at where I am in life with a great marriage, an awesome kiddo, job I like, and a place where I live, and I realize there's three things that got me there. Being born Gen X when school and housing was affordable, with freedom to grow up and learn and have adventures, and there wasn't a social or permanent record of those experiences, in a country that gives people options to try to do better. Lucky. I met a guy washing dishes who lived on my floor that clicked with me, and we've been married. It'll be 25 years this year. If we hadn't lived in the same place, probably never would have met. And I made a decision to work at a company where I met an intern whose dad ran another company who I met, and he rang me up one day about a job, and It was luck and timing, and my skill set was there, and you know, that's the role I have now. And it's all of that plus hard work. But there is some element of this idea that, you know, it's not all you. If anyone tells you it's not the luck or the timing in addition to you, they're kidding themselves. And so Jay talks about, this is one of the quotes that he has, your ego is your false self. So you have to let go of the ego and you have to find your true self. He also talks about how the ego wants everyone to be equal or inferior to you, but true confidence seeks to lift others up. You know, I often have a conversation with a lot of new managers who have worked for me. And the way I describe it is when you move from an individual player on the field to the coach on the sidelines, everything changes. And that's how I equate management, including the fact that no one has an Andy Reid jersey. They have a Patrick Mahomes or a Travis Kelce jersey. You know, the coach takes all the blame, gives away all the credit. That's it. You know, and as a leader, that's your life. Your role is not to be the hero on the team. It's to build a great team and help people shine their star. Often people that are smarter and better than you at certain skills that you don't have. And for some people, it's not easy. If you were an amazing individual player on the team, it can be really hard. You know, recognition and reward is like a drug that really feeds the ego, and you walk away from that cold turkey. But here's the funny thing that people who walk away from their ego don't realize until they do. When your team is awesome, that actually reflects on you and how awesome that is. When your team wins, you win. It just looks and feels different. Managing the, you know, what they have that I don't, or striving to keep others down can dominate your outlook on the world. I mean, I think social media is notorious for this. You see what everybody else has. I often joke that, you know, when I was coming up, you only knew what the kids in your neighborhood had or what the kid at your school had, and maybe like Teen Beat magazine, but you just didn't know what everybody had. And so you weren't always comparing yourself to that. And so the question becomes, can you be thankful for what you have, cherish what you have? Can you try to be better because you want to be better, but not for some other reason to feed your ego? And the last segment that Jay really focuses on is living with intention. So if you aren't purposeful about what you do, life will really decide for you. Jay encourages you to make conscious choices that align with what's important and what you value. If you make decisions from thought and from disconnecting or dissecting why you're making decisions, it can cause you to think differently. And the quote I really like that he has in the book is, "Don't live the same year 75 times and call it a life." The intentionality of planning and living your life with a direction that fits your values, and it really changes the way you think about decisions. When you're chasing something that isn't what you really want, is it causing you to move away from your values? And is that a life you want down the road? And knowing what you value, what's important to you, what you will and won't do, and what you will and won't have, and understanding that you can make better decisions is a key part of living to those values. So have you ever made a decision that afterwards you didn't feel right about it, or something you avoided deciding and the world decided for you and now you should have done something looking back? Was there a misalignment with your values and your intention? So if you can't tell, I got a lot from this book, and it's not really about living like a monk, but it's about what brings peace and joy to a monk's life. Intention, purpose, resilience, and focus applies to every person and any part of your life. If you treat dinner time with the family with intention and purpose, focused on the stories of the day, would that change, you know, if everyone's on a device, or is there a missed opportunity there? What about work? If you focus on taking the lumps, learning and shifting focus to be resilient, to adjust, bob, weave, and get up and not only take another punch, but knock out a few things, you know, are you wandering through life worried about what might happen or what has happened or what you wish you could change? Or are you really choosing to make decisions each year, go on an adventure, big or small, or try to change your life and expand your horizons? So if you like this overview and you think that this might be a book that you would like, it's Jay Shetty, Think Like a Monk. I'd encourage you to check it out. If you've read it, I'd love to know what you think, what stuck with you. And if you want to check it out, it's available everywhere. I'd recommend it. Recommend listening to his podcast if you like the concept related to it. And I really want to thank you for listening. I'm Katie O, host of Curious Katie O, and I look forward to connecting with you next time.